Another helping of oysters, clams, and katanas presented by Bolin Media. I am Ross Bolin Sama here today with Cade Orris Sama to digest and discuss the 8th episode of Shogun from Hulu/FX titled The Abyss of Life. Reminder, Barrett is taking care of some business out of town this week, so he's out, and our producer, Cade, is filling in for him, and we really appreciate Cade stepping up. Thanks, Cade.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here again.
And quickly, before we dive into this episode of Shogun, give us a follow on social media, if you would, please. We are at Oysters Clams Cockles on Instagram, at Oysters Clams and Cockles on TikTok, and at Clams and Cockles on X, formerly known as Twitter. All right, you ready to dive into this thing, Cade?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Episode 8, cold opens with Toranaga and all his people riding into Edo, so that Toranaga can begin mourning the loss of his son, Nagakoto, who passed away after a tragic slip and fall last week in episode 7. Yabushige comments that cracking his head on a stone was not a death he had thought of and tells his consort to be sure and record it in their book, which I assume is a book of ways to die that he is putting together.
Right, yeah.
He says, I'd rank it lower than boiling, but higher than eaten by dogs.
So is he ranking it based on, like, the worst way someone could die, or, like, just, like, how he would kill someone?
I don't know. Based on the boiling and eaten by dogs comparison, it was really hard to tell what he meant by that.
Yeah, because I feel like I would put, if it was ways to, like, kill someone, I feel like I would put being eaten by dogs above.
Both of these seem much worse than cracking your head on a stone.
Yeah.
Boiling alive, like we saw that one guy do.
Right.
Or being eaten by dogs, I also assume would be kind of a long and drawn out, painful, horrifying experience.
Right, and because like when he boiled that one dude, he's like, he wanted to like hear the final moments of that person's death.
Yeah.
And I feel like you don't really get that with the cracking your head open, but that you do for sure if you're getting eaten by dogs.
Yeah, but Shige's a weird dude.
Yeah, he's a weird cat for
sure. He's a weird dude. Psyche, Toranaga's half-brother who betrayed him and joined the Council of Regents in Episode 7, will have his army surrounding Edo to ensure Toranaga does not escape until he has concluded his mourning period, which is customarily 49 days you are allowed to mourn. I don't know why they didn't just go with the round number of 50.
Yeah, I'm not sure how they came up with that number, but
49 days, whatever. Though, that's what you get. And this seems like quite a loophole. Like, really, he's about to be shipped off to Osaka, in all likelihood, to die, mm-hmm. Toranaga. But his kid slips and falls, and now he's got 49 days back in his hometown to think shit over.
Yeah, a lot of time to mourn.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I guess losing a son probably takes a while longer than 49 days to fully recover. But it's just strange that they get a window at all. And we're like, oh, sorry, that really sucks.
Yeah, sorry for your loss, but you got to come to Osaka and we got to,
you know, got to take care of business. Yeah. Especially if you're psyche, like, hey, he was trying to kill me when he slipped and fell.
Yeah, I don't think he really deserves to mourn his son, but yeah.
So he gets 49 days and then Psyche will deliver Toranaga and his people to Osaka. And Toranaga is not looking good. He's like half slumped over on his horse, coughing as he rides. Mm-hmm.
Did you think he was, like, faking this at all? Like,
the possibility occurred to me.
Yeah. Like, you know, just doing a bit?
I mean, at this point, and especially with this episode, as we will get into it, it's really, really tough to read this guy. Like, what's real, what's not. Like, over the course of this episode, over several different scenes, it really does feel like he's actually given up.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the end, maybe not.
Yeah, the cough seems to go away.
Right. Yeah, so I really couldn't tell, but it did occur to me early on, like watching him riding into Edo, like, is he really, is he sick? Or is he just really upset about the death of Nagakoto, that didn't really seem like all that realistic to me. Cause it,
yeah, I don't know like how you would get sick from that, but like, yeah, it seems like he just wants like everyone around him to think that he's like, he's getting weaker.
And on his last leg. Yeah. Yeah. Blackthorn rides up and says he is sorry for Torunaga's loss, receiving only a glare from Torunaga in return. And then on behalf of Torunaga, Todomoriko gives Blackthorn his journal and the logs back for the completion of his service. The two books that were taken by Rodriguez out of Blackthorn's ship back in like episode 2.
Mm-hmm.
Basically the things that incriminate him.
Yeah,
right?
But it didn't seem like anything was going to come of that. I was like, Torunaga's like seems like just completely done with Blackthorn.
Yeah.
So I don't know like if anything like was ever going to come of him like getting back.
Those two books gave Torunaga the ability to put Blackthorn in grave danger. So I think him giving the books back is like the official end of their relationship, at least so it would seem.
Yeah.
Right?
So you don't think like this is still like Torunaga like scheming or
I mean, based on the end of the episode, I do, but I don't know how this really played into it so much. That's where a lot of the confusion for me comes in, is like this seemed like a pretty definitive, I'm done with you. Here's the shit I had on you. Here's the shit I could have used to blackmail you. You're useless to me now.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, at the end of the episode, Blackthorn is still very much a part of Torunaga's plan. So,
even if he doesn't realize it.
Yeah, he has no clue, obviously. But yeah, Mariko also tells Blackthorn that Fujisama will manage his lands until he returns. So it sounds like, even if Blackthorn is like, peace, I'm going to get my men, get my ship, and bounce from the Japans, he still has that plot of land back in Izu, like where his house is,
right,
that his consort, Fujisama, will just manage in case he one day does return. That was the impression I took. Like, like damn, thought they would take that shit back for sure.
But then she also said that, like, she's not sure, like, what, like, the new, like...
The new caretaker, whoever takes over, whoever wins.
Yeah, like, if he will receive a warm welcome.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, she does put that out there. She also tells Blackthorn that his men, the crew from his ship, are in Edo and must be eager to be reunited with them, she says. Blackthorn also briefly tries to talk Mariko out of going to Osaka with Torunaga, obviously concerned that she will die for no reason, but she says her allegiance requires her to go, which is not all that surprising. So then we get the opening sequence with the music and the, you know, visuals. And after that, we're in Osaka with Ishido congratulating Lady Ochiba for bringing Torunaga down. But Ochiba says, until he has his head pressed to the floor in submission, they are not free from his threat. Ochiba acknowledges that this 49-day mourning period has bought him time to remain threatening, while Ishido is more like he's trying to get on with the celebration and marry this woman, it turns out. He suggests that they strengthen their bond through marriage. And Lady Ochiba, she seems a little freaked out by him pressing her this way. Does not respond.
Yeah, she doesn't even like really look at him, too. When
doesn't say a word.
Brings it up.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, yeah, it is because of a fear of like what this guy could do and like thinking that like he might kill her if she says no.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and as Mariko informs us in this episode, like, as far as she knows, Lady Ochiba's main motivator is fear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's scared, right? So, yeah, Ochiba does not respond to Ishido, and Ishido tells her that the offer is hers to consider, and then he departs. And while it might not seem like we got an answer in this episode, I think we actually did in the last 15 minutes there, which we'll get to. But back in Edo, all of Torunaga's men, minus Torunaga himself, who was not present, dine and remember Nagakoto together. This was an interesting scene because there was a lot more respectful things being said about Nagakoto than I expected.
Yeah. I mean, there were some shots thrown at him, too.
For sure. But he was like a total clown.
Mm-hmm.
And like Bontaro says, Nagakoto was brave. Hiramatsu says he was reckless. And then Omi says that he died because he refused to accept the death that their lord Torunaga has chosen for them with surrender. Omi seems to respect that. Omi and him were kind of boys.
Yeah.
You know, they hit the hot tub together.
Right. But that also, like, kind of confused me because, like, yeah, it does seem like Omi, like, had a certain level of respect for him. But, like, no, in episode 4 or whatever, when, like, he, like, kind of convinced him to, no, kill that one general with
to
the
do
cannon
practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely manipulated him.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that necessarily meant that he wasn't, like, actually friends with him. He just kind of was doing his uncle's bidding or whatever at that point, I think. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I realize they're trying to give different perspectives on Nagakato's life and death here. But the kid, like, he was an overzealous moron, like, plain and simple. There wasn't a whole lot about him to like as a viewer.
Right.
And, frankly, we didn't get much of him outside of him doing dumb shit. So, anyway, the scene of them discussing him was interesting. So next we're at Nagakato's funeral, where once again, Torinaga is not present. Hiramatsu tells Yabushige that Torinaga has fallen very sick from his journey, and Yabushige is like, oh, you haven't seen him either, huh? So it seems like Torinaga's holed up in the palace, is not seeing or hanging out with any of his people at this point. Yabushige suggests that, like he says, he references the things that Omi said at the little dinner the night prior, and suggests that they ride to Osaka with guns and cannon. After all, Torinaga's Edo generals wear their armor to the funeral to protest Torinaga's surrender. So clearly there are dudes, the generals in Edo that command Torinaga's forces are not down with surrendering. They're wearing their armor in protest of surrender. And Yabushige is like, look, we could use these guys. We can roll. Let's get the cannons. Let's get the guns. Let's go attack Osaka.
And, like, Torinaga mentions it, that, like, he was, like, upset about that. But, like, isn't that, like, just, like, a thing? Like, you know, like, military, to, like, generals, like, will wear their, like, uniforms and stuff, like, at funerals.
Yeah.
But, like, I guess in, like, this case, like,
and I guess more, in this culture, that's not the case. Yeah. And I think doing so under these circumstances could be perceived as, like, an act of aggression when they're supposed to be submitting at this point. So that's what has Torinaga upset, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, Hiramatsu tells Yabushige that he alone will head to Osaka as a condition of their surrender, and that he'll be returning the guns and cannons at the request of Ishido. So as far as Yabushige knows at this point, he's going to go to Osaka before anybody else and return the guns and cannons that Torinaga has as a part of their surrender, as demanded by Ishido. And Yabushige looks very upset by this. He's like, oh, fuck, I'm going to die. And we get a shot of Torinaga watching his son's funeral pyre burn from a distance. And he's just kind of like cooped up by himself. Again, we really don't know what to make of what's going on with this guy at this point. Then Buntaro informs Mariko that Torinaga has requested her presence this afternoon. He also requests that he be allowed to make tea for his wife, which she accepts, and will make for a very awkward scene later in the episode. But just early on here, it seems like he's trying to make the peace.
Yeah. And she was like, oh, yeah, tea sounds great. She's like, I will accept. Like, sure, let's, fine, I'll drink some tea with you.
Yeah, she doesn't seem capable of refusing it.
No. And who is the lady she was with? Is that Torinaga's wife?
Yeah, okay. One of his wives, the one who had a baby that he hasn't visited yet.
Well, he is sick, so, I mean, probably don't want to get your newborn sick. I get it.
He's in town and can't even visit his baby mama. Yeah. Sad. Very unfair. Next, we're with Blackthorn and Edo trying to get some charcoal for a fire when Father Alvido wanders up, and he's impressed by Blackthorn's assimilation into Japanese culture. He's like, wow, dude, I didn't think you had it in you.
Yeah. And, like, I think he was trying to, like, he thought he was, like, asking for firewood, like Alvido was, but he's like, no, like, Blackthorn's like, no, I meant this. Like,
I've got this, dude.
Yeah. I don't need your help, man.
Right. Alvido says, like, I'm not here for you, man. I'm here because I have urgent business with Torinaga. And he wonders aloud what Blackthorn will do now that Torinaga has clearly cut him loose. Alvido's pretty sharp. He picks up on it. He's like, if you're living out here and you're looking for charcoal or firewood or whatever, you're supposed to be living in the palace with him if you're a Hatamoto. So you're clearly not in the inner circle anymore. You're no longer in the circle of trust, and I can see that.
Yeah, Black Florence is just kind of like a lost puppy out there right now. He doesn't really know what to do.
He has no clue, yeah. He does say to Alvito that he intends on attacking the black ship he's heard so much about. I don't know why he would tell Alvito that. It feels like that gives Alvito an opportunity to potentially better defend the black ship that's so important to Portuguese trade.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like he's also like made that clear for a while now that he doesn't like no fuck with the Portuguese, obviously, and like he wants to take out their ship.
Yeah, that's very fair. Alvito asks Blackthorne if he will wear the clothes he is currently wearing, the traditional Japanese garb he's been given, when he sees his own men, kind of implying like you're kind of a turncoat. You're on the other team now.
Right.
Are you going to go roll up in that jersey to your boys? Let them see you like this? But Blackthorne's like, yeah, totally I am.
Mm-hmm.
I for sure am. It's not a big deal. It's fine. Everybody's going to be cool with it. They're going to like my threads.
Yeah, the thing going to look sick.
Yeah. Torinaga then meets with Alvito. He also has Hiromatsu and Mariko in there with him. And Alvito tells Torinaga that Ishido has bent the Council of Regents to his will, and that his efforts in their partnership have failed. Because Alvito and Torinaga struck that deal on the ship before leaving for Izu that, they were kind of going to partner up. That if Alvito could do certain things, then Torinaga would give him a church in Edo. Alvito's telling him, like, hey, I wasn't able to get these people on your side.
Did they ever show that conversation with Alvito and, like, the two regents he was talking about? Was that...
I don't think so. Okay, so. I don't think that was something we got to see.
Okay, so that he could have just, like, been lying about that.
It's possible.
Like, but, yeah.
But Torinaga refuses after that to speak in Japanese directly with Alvito, and he tells Mariko that she has to translate for him because he cannot be trusted. It's almost like you only get to speak Japanese with me if I'm cool with you.
Yeah, if I respect you.
And I'm no longer cool with you because you failed to bring these other regents to my side. Alvito then suggests that Torinaga form an alliance with Lady Ochiba so the heir can be free to turn against Ishido. He basically says, look, Ishido does not care about the heir. He just wants power. In all likelihood, him having power puts the heir in danger. So if you can partner up with Ochiba, then the heir will be free to turn against Ishido. This takes care of everything. Ishido no longer has a foothold on power. And Hiromatsu, who, as we all know, is Torinaga's like right-hand man.
Mm-hmm.
This is his oldest and bestest boy.
One like the very few people he trusts.
I would say the only person he can trust all the way, really.
Mm-hmm.
Hiromatsu agrees with Alvito, says Osaka is not their enemy. Ishido is. And he tells Torinaga that his face wears the color of defeat and that he has given up on those who would never give up on him. Torinaga starts to get defensive. He says his son is dead. He will have no further bloodshed, that he will require a pledge of allegiance in writing from his Edo generals who wore armor to his son's funeral to promise they will march in surrender to Osaka with him. Things kind of start to spiral out of control in this conversation, and it ends up carrying over into the meeting we do have later with the Edo generals present. But again, this is a moment where you're like, is this like genuine conflict and disagreement between Hiromatsu and Torinaga? Or is it staged in front of Alvito?
Yeah, so he can go and back to Osaka, let Ishido and them know that, like, yeah, there's like bad blood between those two. And like, Torinaga is like essentially giving up and like, yeah, making him look weak. He knows that he's sick too and all of that. So,
right. So Torinaga tells Alvito that since he has kept his promise, Torinaga will also keep his and allow the church to build a new church here in Edo. In return, though, he asks that Alvito go back to Osaka and tell them what he sees here. And he says that very specifically, just again, like Cade just said, very strange, because it's like almost him saying, yeah, tell them I'm giving up for real, and me and my boy are on the outs, and like it's a shitstorm down here. We're fucking up. So it becomes pretty clear Torinaga is plotting something, as he wants Osaka and Lady Ochiba and Lord Ishido to see him as like weak, depleted, and defeated. And he says, still in front of Alvito, all I want is a peaceful death. But when they're giving us shots of like Hiromatsu and Torinaga, I'm buying it. I'm buying what he's selling. I'm like, yeah, damn,
like
this dude
giving
is
up.
He's like, the death of his son was like the last straw, and he seems like he's done. And I'm buying Hiromatsu's like shock and disappointment too, that Torinaga is giving up. Like Hiromatsu seems genuinely appalled and discouraged and disturbed by what he's hearing come out of his oldest friend's mouth.
See, I think, like, I always kind of figured that, like, Torunaga had something up his sleeve. Like, he keeps everything close to the chest.
It's just been, like, weeks and weeks of this now.
I know. And, again, like, I know you, like, trust Hiramatsu, like, the most out of anyone. But it's, like, if he, like, tells him, like, hey, I'm actually going to, like, go and, like, still attack Osaka, you can't, like, but I need to look like we're, like, there's beef between us right now.
Right.
Because then, like, you have to fake it, and then it doesn't look genuine.
Yeah.
And then, like, Alvito might be like, oh, no, I actually think they're scheming.
Yeah, if it
doesn't
look bullshit.
It doesn't seem genuine, yeah.
Yeah. So Hiramatsu leaves the meeting and tells Yabushige, Omi, and Buntaro that Torunaga intends to fight. And he knows this because otherwise he would not have sent Alvito back to Osaka with that message. Now, this is a very important line that Hiramatsu delivers, because as of the meeting that just occurred between Alvito and Torunaga with Hiramatsu and Mariko present, Hiramatsu is now reading into it the way that we are trying to and saying, okay, he's got something going on, because there's no way he would have sent this priest back to Osaka and tell him, you know, what he has seen here, to tell them what he has seen here, unless he was going to fight. So based on that, you got to keep that in mind when we get to what Hiramatsu does later. So next we get Mariko entering some sort of like a tea house, but an actual tea house, not a place filled with courtesans. She like slides open a little window and like climbs.
Yeah, it's like
in
a little secret passage.
I thought
or something.
She was like sneaking around. That was a confusing moment. But she gets in there. Buntaro meets her in there, and they recite some poetry together. Then he serves her cha. Or tea, as dramatic music plays. This is clearly a big deal. A husband serving his wife in this way, and Mariko seems honored, and she says, your performance was wonderful.
Really good at pouring tea.
Yeah. Yeah, just like old Kiku's really good at pouring sake.
Yeah.
Buntaro tells Mariko he thinks they're going to die in Osaka regardless of what his father says, and that he remembers how happy they were in their first days together. Mariko struggles to remember herself, she says.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they were actually all that happy. Yeah.
Which prompts Buntaro to ask her if she's still under the Anjin's spell. And she just doesn't respond, which is basically saying yes.
Yeah.
And then Buntaro's like, we should go to death together.
We should kill ourselves.
Tonight. We should kill ourselves. Are you still falling for that white boy? No response. Let's kill each other.
Yeah.
Let's kill ourselves tonight. Let's do this. He says, quote, I wish to finally give it to you in protest of our Lord's surrender and your enemies. Let us welcome death together. Let us enter oblivion as husband and wife. And at first, this was pretty concerning because I was just like, well, first of all, damn, Buntaro's like we said last episode, not much is going well for Torunaga. He only has a few guys really in his corner at all. Buntaro certainly is one of them. And now he's trying to get out. He wants to die. Mariko has been trying to die the whole season and much before it even. And now she's got the permission that we thought she wanted.
She's been asking for the entire season.
But she says even now Buntaro fails to understand that what he has denied her wasn't death, but a life beyond his reach. Basically being like, No, I don't want to die. I just don't want to be around you.
Yeah, I don't want to be with you anymore, so I'd rather kill myself than do that. So, yeah, I don't want to actually kill myself with you.
She says, I would sooner live 1,000 years than die with you like this.
That's
it's harder to hear something more brutal than that.
Mm-hmm.
So she leaves, and Buntaro's like, just starts crying.
And, like, I don't know, did you notice like how like he wasn't like ever like facing her directly? He was kind of like at an
slightly
angle
to the side. Yeah,
I don't know like what was up with that, but like that just like flagged for me, and I was like, that's interesting.
Yeah, they definitely intentionally showed us that, right? They like they give you that shot where he's turned at an angle, she's facing him straight on, and I think it must have been like out of respect the way that the conversation was going, like how they actually did it, because I read an article with the showrunners, and one of the things that they spent a ton of time on in putting Shogun together was, like, the way people walk, like Lord Torunaga versus Lady Maria, Toda Mariko. they walk completely differently. The women walk differently. The consorts walk differently than the courtesans. The courtesans walk. Everybody sits in a certain way, and it's all very historically accurate. Mm-hmm. So I have to assume that there is some formal reason, like a social cue, for why Buntaro sits at that angle. Maybe it's like apologetic or respectful or whatever it may be.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so she just leaves this dude up in his feelings. It's like too little too late, Buster. And it's time to talk about something Buntaro won't be doing anytime soon. Pillowing. This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew, fellow aging samurai. Remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence when pillowing time comes around. Listen up, BlueChew.com. Blue Chew is a unique service, online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra, Cialis, and Levitra, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever an opportunity arises. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part, it's all done online, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped direct to your door in a discreet package, I might add. I've used Blue Chew's tablets several times and personally achieved an erection harder than the rock in Blackthorn's garden. If you're looking for more confidence, if you're looking to make a lasting impression, if you're in the market for the best pillowing of your life, Blue Chew could be the answer for you, too. Blue Chew wants to help you have better sex. Discover your options at BlueChew.com. Chew it and do it. We've got a special deal for the Clam Fam. Try Blue Chew free when you use our code OCC at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code OCC to receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast. Next, we're with Blackthorn attempting to reunite with his men from his ship. His guide, he's got like a guy that's like walking him. As he's like, I know where these fuckers are. I'll show you.
Yeah.
And his guide informs him that the men have been drinking all the sake in the region for months.
Just been getting shit.
And they will be glad to be rid of them. Yeah, these dudes have just been getting white boy wasted up in Edo.
Yeah, that's literally all they've been doing. Clearly haven't been showering much either.
No, they don't have great hygiene, the pirates. They just don't. So Blackthorn starts to approach the like set of tents, houses, whatever, these little, I thought they were in like a whorehouse area or something. I don't really know what they were doing, but he starts to walk up. Then he like picks up a foul stench. He's like, oh God, smells like those fucking guys. He sees one of his dudes named Solomon stumble out. He's like attempting to pick up a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then Blackthorn's like, I changed my mind.
I'm gonna head out.
He turns to leave, but Solomon sees him and calls to him, and Blackthorn has no choice but to talk to him.
Yeah. Which I didn't like get fully because I'm like, his back was turned to him and like he had like longer hair.
So yeah,
like,
there's just not that many white people.
Right. I figured, but like, I know it's dark out. I'm like, huh, that, and he's drunk. I was like, there's no way like he could have just like picked him out.
It
like
did
that.
Seem a little far fetched, yeah.
But because I do get it, like
he's a good like 30 feet away.
Yeah, I'm like I do get like he's probably the only other white guy he's seen out here, so that does make sense.
No, but to your point, his back is turned. You can't see much of his skin. Mm-hmm. He's got the long robes
it's
on.
It's dark
and
out there. Yeah, he's wearing a different getup.
Yeah, but anyway, Solomon tells Blackthorn there are only 6 of their crew left, and I want to say there were like 10, maybe 8.
Mm-hmm.
Some guys have died is the point. Some more guys have died other than the dude who got boiled alive. I'm assuming not by like murder so much as like not taking care of themselves and not having food and just drinking sake nonstop.
Yeah.
But he says the 6 that are still there are barely hanging on. And Blackthorn's like, oh, well, I've gotten clearance for us to return to our ship and go home.
Did he actually, though? Like,
sort of.
But did Torinaga say, he's like, oh, I'm going to give you your ship back, and then you can go and do whatever?
Well, he told Mariko to tell him, like, here's your shit. We're done.
Okay.
And your men are here.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So not really, to answer your question.
Yeah. He's not not free to leave still, or?
I don't know. I got the impression that Blackthorn actually believed what he was saying. but what he was saying himself. Mm-hmm. But Solomon doesn't buy it. He blames Blackthorn for this entire Japanese venture. He even goes so far as to say, like, you know, I've had a lot of time to think about this while we've been stuck here in Edo. And I don't think we ever had, like, because there was that line several episodes ago where he's like, there were Spanish ships to the north and Portuguese ships to the south, and we had no choice but to go through the strait and end up in Japan. He's saying, like, that was all bullshit. You played us. You used us. A bunch of men died. This whole situation is your fault. And then he fights him. He's like, take off those skirts, and punches him in the face. And Blackthorn beats his ass pretty brutally. Like, he gets him down on the ground.
I always thought, yeah, he killed him, but I think he just got, like, knocked out.
I think he just put him out cold. Yeah. But, like, he gets him down on the ground, and then, like, in a UFC fight, except if there was no referee, mm-hmm. he just keeps pounding on him. And, but, yeah, I'm 99.9% sure he stopped before the dude was dead.
Probably should have been talking shit about the kimono.
No, shouldn't have talked shit on the threads.
Yeah.
But then after, so, like, Blackthorn has a line where he's like, God, he's filthy. And then he takes off, like, his overcoat, is what I'll call it,
mm-hmm.
his top layer,
yeah,
and he throws it on the guy. Like, here's some clothes, you disgusting fuck. And it was pretty clear, just based on the way this whole scene unfolds, I think the message we're supposed to receive is that Blackthorn no longer feels the kinship with his former crew that he once did, that he is a changed man. These people's society and their culture in Japan has, like, taken hold of him. The fact that, you know, Blackthorn was filthy when he arrived. Multiple times, they're like, hey, dude, take a bath. He's like, I took one 4 days ago. It's fine. I'm good. Another bath? And now he's judging this member of his former crew as filthy himself. So, like, he's been through a lot. Doesn't fit in with the British pirates anymore.
Yeah. And again, it's like, yeah, he doesn't fit in with his old crew, and he doesn't really fit in
with his new crew.
Yeah. And so, again, he's just kind of, like, lost out there and doesn't know what to do.
A man with no home, yeah.
And then, like, that's why he ends up going to Yabushige, which we're about to
get to. Yeah, this scene is wild, because the way it unfolds, like, we just see Blackthorn talking. You can tell he's going to ask for a favor.
Mm-hmm.
And you assume at first that he's talking to Toranaga.
Yeah, he's going to give that same speech again.
Yeah, exactly. My man, my ships.
Yeah.
Tell me what I'm supposed to do as part of Crimson Sky. But Mariko is with him, and you kind of just, we've seen that scene unfold so many times with him and Mariko and Toranaga, and then they quickly show you it's Yabushige. And he asks Yabushige if he can sail for him to sail under his banner on his behalf. Yabushige initially, he doesn't really have, like, a strong reaction, but Omi, his nephew, turns and looks at him like, absolutely fucking not.
Yeah, it's like, that's like treason, pretty much.
And so Yabushige refuses and says Blackthorn is wrong to think that Toranaga has given up, because one of Blackthorn's reasons is, like, listen, our lord is going to die soon. So he clearly has no use for me. Perhaps you do, and I can sail for you. Blackthorn says he may have once fooled himself into believing that he could belong in this place, but no longer. All he wants to do now is whittle what fate he can for himself, to make his own fate. And he says he knows Yabushige understands that from when he saw him face death on that cliff many months ago and took his fate into his own hands by preparing to commit seppuku amongst the waves. And you can tell, like, Blackthorn gives this speech, and it hits home with Yabushige.
Yeah, it kind of struck a chord with them.
Yeah, he's like, that's fucking right. We are the same kind of dude, you and I. Like, he really identifies with that. He's taken by the similarities in their outlook. But because Omi is present and continuing to judge him, Yabushige tells Blackthorn he is wrong, and he refuses his offer as a betrayal of their lord. And Mariko is disgusted with Blackthorn as well. Like, there's no explaining treachery, she says. But still, you do leave that scene feeling like Yabushige liked that offer.
Yeah, he liked what he heard.
Regardless of if he couldn't accept it in front of all those people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He also has that, Blackthorn has that line that Mariko ends up asking, like, did you want me to translate that? Or was that just for me? And wait, what did he say there?
He said, loyalty, at a certain point, loyalty becomes foolish if to maintain it is suicide. So, like, he's saying, look, you're loyal to Toranaga, sure.
Yeah.
But if your loyalty takes you to Osaka on what is a suicide mission, what's the point of the loyalty?
Right.
And she's like, you want me to translate that, or was that one for me?
But I also do feel like it could apply to like everyone there too.
Yeah, for sure. It's just interesting that Blackthorn and Mariko, they're still. It's like they're dating secretly, right? Because they have these little exchanges still, where you can tell
no one else knows what they're talking about either,
and you can tell there's more to their relationship than just a translator and her, you know, employer, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we got another one of those here. Next, Jin, the owner of Willow World, she goes out and visits the plot of muddy land that Torunaga has set aside for her to build Willow World 2.0. My first thought was like, just like a bog, a swamp? What is this?
Yeah, it seemed like Torunaga just like threw him out in like the outskirts. Like, it's not like really in the city or near the city. It's just like,
just a mud pile out there on the outskirts. But she's stoked.
Oh, she can't wait to get the building. Yeah, she's got it all mapped out in her head.
Yeah, she's like smiling. She's overtaken with emotion. She's just walking out there on the spot by herself. And as Kiku explains, like, this is a lifelong dream realized for old Jin. And then, like 100 yards away,
this may be
stone's throw, Father Alvito walks to the plot of land that Torunaga has set aside for his new church, and then quickly has the realization that Torunaga has given him land next to a tea house of courtesans.
Yeah, I love, like, he asks, like, who's that over there?
Who are those people?
It's like, oh, those are your neighbors, the courtesans. And his face just, like, drops, like, oh, fuck.
He just goes, courtesans. Like, he's remembering, like courtesans equals prostitutes. Damn it, he stuck me next to a whorehouse.
Yeah, no, very intentional about Torunaga there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and this is another one of the moments in the episode that reminds you, like, okay, even if we've been getting dragged along for a few episodes here, Torunaga is still that dude.
Mm-hmm.
He still knows what he's doing. He's still planning. He's still scheming on some level. The very fact that he still gives Alvito, he's like, you know what? I'll hold up my end of the bargain. I'll let you build a church here.
We're just going to put that church next to the whorehouse.
Right next to Willow World 2.0.
Yeah.
And I had suspicions that those things might come. We talked a little bit about this on Patreon last week, I think. That the fact that he had agreed with Jin, like, yes, you can come build, but he had also made that deal with the Catholics, like, yeah, you can put a church in Edo if you do some of this maneuvering for me, that might be a problem. Well, here it is. Very next week.
Yeah, well, it's honestly, like, not a terrible idea, too, because, you're like, you know, you go to Willow World on a Saturday night.
Right.
Wake up Sunday morning, you got a church right there for you.
He'll get your sins forgiven.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
I also like the conversation with Omi and Kiku, because he, like, asked her, he's like, you know, like, you're kind of the reason for all of this. Like, don't you feel like you deserve more?
Yeah, like, you got her this.
Yeah. And, I mean, obviously, she's getting, like, a whole house to herself, so, like, she's, like, gonna be all right. But he's like, you deserve more. He's like, do you think, like, loyalty...
to a certain point can be bad.
Yeah. And, like, I feel like...
She says no, directly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I feel like he's also, like, asking himself that, because he's like, if I'm, like, I'm being loyal to Torunaga, even though it's, like, it's gonna lead to certain death. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, should I, like, follow the same path, almost?
Now, that was a really, really important conversation there. I'm glad you stopped us on this, because when I rewatched the episode this morning to make my outline, that scene stuck out. Because if you pay attention to Omi the rest of the episode, what Kiku said to him clearly took hold.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at the scene where we're about to get to it, where the generals, everybody has to sign their name on the paper, Omi signs his name without much protest. And what Kiku tells him in response to his line of questioning there is, basically, like, if you don't see what is happening, you need to look harder. She's telling him, like, if you can't see the plan, or, like, she's speaking in, like, general terms, not, like, related to Torunaga necessarily. But she's saying, like, if you can't see it ahead of you, like, the path, you have to look harder. And then when Omi is in that room with everybody else, you know, getting ready to sign this document saying they'll be a part of the surrender in Osaka with Torunaga, he looks hard at Torunaga. And in my opinion, makes the read that Torunaga is still in the game. That the things he's saying and doing are not for real. And that there's something beneath the surface he can't see, so he needs to stay loyal on some level. That was my read.
Mm.
So I thought that scene with Omi and Kiku was really important. And because he's really floundering, he's like, I don't know what my fucking purpose is anymore. A lot of people are feeling this way, right? It's the same thing. Black
the vibes
feels.
Are very low for everyone. Everyone's
morale
just like,
is dog shit.
Yeah, no one knows what the plan is.
They all think they're gonna go die.
Yeah,
and she gives him that little like pick me up. Kiku does related to Jin and Willow World 2.0, and I think it really hits home for Omi. So yeah, we've got that whole situation out there in the mud. Also, the church is also in the mud pit. Like, but like first, before he sees the hooker house, he is stoked as well, Alvito.
Yeah. And yeah, like they cut from Jen and them to like Alvito. I'm like, oh man, like Torinaga literally put them in the same spot. And like, that's when it clicked for me. I'm like, oh my God, he's a genius for doing
like,
that.
Right next door, yeah. So then we get the shot back in Osaka. Lady Dion, who is the former wife of the Taiko, has a stroke. And this might have been tough for some of us viewers to pick up on, like, because you're just like, oh, shit, this lady's having a stroke, but who is this lady?
Yeah.
She's the lady from the flashback that tells Ochiba, like, you need to get pregnant from the Taiko, because I can't do it. None of these other women could do it. We need an heir. You're going to be the one to make us that heir. And she's kind of stuck around with her this whole time, I guess, as sort of an advisor. But that's who Lady Dion is, the former wife of the Taiko who could not produce an heir. So Ochiba visits her, and Dion, like with her last words, basically, is like, promise me you will stop these games. Promise me you'll release the hostages and abandon Ishido. She's like, that guy sucks. He comes from nothing. He will always be nothing. He is nothing. And she seems, Dion, to tell Ochiba, like, this isn't it. This isn't fucking it. You got to make another move. You got to do something different. This Ishido guy sucks.
Yeah, and it's very similar to what Alvito was saying to Torinaga, that, like, Ochiba, like, isn't really loyal to him. She's just loyal to her heir.
Right.
And that, like, you need to, like, make an alliance with her and, you know, take out Ishido because he just wants power.
Yeah, Dion doesn't go so far as to say, like, you need to go get with Torinaga.
Right.
But she's like, this Ishido dude cannot be it. Ochiba gives her some medicine to ease her suffering, and then Lady Dion passes away. And Ochiba seems deeply impacted by this loss, but we'll have one more scene with Ochiba that is obviously very important. But so my point being, she seems like she is in a place to be, if not manipulated, then guided in a different direction, which is important because we know Tota Mariko is headed to Osaka, presumably to try and influence Lady Ochiba
to join with
on Torinaga's behalf. Yeah. So we'll have to wait and see next episode, the penultimate episode, how that all unfolds. But the scene with Dion dying seemed like a really important one for Ochiba and the prospect of potentially going a different route that is not Ishido based. Back in Edo, definitely the craziest scene of the episode, right? Hiromatsu, Buntaro, Yabushige, and all these Edo generals face Torinaga in their big meeting room, right? They're told to sign their names on this paper that Yabushige will deliver to Osaka, indicating who all is surrendering with Torinaga. And Yabushige signs, does not really protest or think about it. I think he's just like, oh, fuck it, I'm dead anyway. Omi signs, like we already talked about, gives a very distinct look to Torinaga, like he's really trying to look harder. And Buntaro signs, even though they don't show us Buntaro signing, he's the third in line, you have to make the assumption that he signed. And then they get to the Edo generals, and they refuse to sign. Now, first watch, I was like, who the fuck is that guy?
Yeah.
Like, where the fuck? But these are the guys that they showed wearing the armor at the funeral.
Right.
Right? It just like, unless you were really paying attention there, like, okay, those are the Edo generals. You wouldn't have tracked them to, like, this scene.
We haven't seen them at any other point
right,
during
because
the
they've been here in Edo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's who these dudes are. They're the Edo generals that wore the armor to Nagakato's funeral. So they're like, hey, man, we're not going to sign this. Clearly, this is a ploy. Basically saying, you've got something else going on. You're not fucking telling us. And we're not signing this without being in on it. And he's like, there is no trickery occurring. Torinaga insists. He says, Japan is more important than the survival of their clan. Like, basically, like, there is no one part that's more important than the whole, right? And that his fight is decided. And again, a scene where, like, at face value, like, I am buying what Torunaga is selling.
That you think he's just giving
I'm
up.
I'm like, damn, this dude is out. He does not want to play anymore. He is bowing out, right? Like, yeah. That, it really, we've been told all, the only thing keeping you from buying in all the way is that you've been told all of this about Torunaga, that he is, like, a master manipulator, trickster, schemer, and he has all this honor and seems like our protagonist. So it'd be pretty weird for us just to watch this whole season, and in the end, he's like, I don't want to play anymore. Yeah.
And again, it's like, he's not going to tell anyone this because they have to believe it's real.
Heart. Yeah. Well, yeah, and that too. This all has to, I think part of it, to your point, Cade, is that he has to assume that there are spies.
Yeah.
And that there are rats. And if he doesn't sell this wholeheartedly to that whole fucking room, then it won't work. Which brings us to how the rest of this unfolds. Hiromatsu, right when things are about to seemingly, like, erupt into conflict even within that room, like, one of the Edo generals, like, puts his hand on his sword hilt. I was like, fuck, are they going to fight right here? Hiromatsu steps in and says, like, Torunaga, if you will not change your mind, then I will commit seppuku right here at once, he says.
Because they all think, like, they're going there to die. So he's like, I'm going to kill myself just so, like, you can, like, change your mind and, like, actually, like, go out without a fight.
I mean, this was layered.
Yeah.
And I think if we are to believe what Torunaga says at the end of the episode, then, again, having rewatched it, I think Hiromatsu saw the writing on the wall, saw what was happening in this room as Torunaga's telling them, like, sign your names, we're going to Osaka, we're all going to die. These Edo generals are floundering. They don't want to sign. Other guys are questioning what's happening. A lot of loyalty has been lost. And he's like, I got to take this into my own hands. I got to do something drastic. Now, how that plays into, like, the rest of the room falling into, you know, line, I don't really get it. Because, like, let's just go through what happens here. Hiromatsu, seems to me, he's deflecting all the other tension and the potential conflict in the room. He's, like, pulling all of that to himself. And then Torunaga and him participate in a game of, like, seppuku chicken, where he's like, I'll fucking do it. And Torunaga's like, do it then, bitch. Do it then, bitch. I'm not going to stop you. I won't yield. I'm not going to do it. He's like, I will do it, dude. I'll do it right here. I'll do it. And then it starts raining. And Torunaga tells him, like, I've made my decision. Now you have to make yours. And Hiromatsu gives this great line. He said, so you do believe in pointless death, which is a callback to episode 2 or 1, where after that one dude stands up and defends Torunaga in Ishidu's presence at the Council of Regents in Osaka, that guy then has to commit seppuku and sacrifice his son, his baby son, as well. And Torunaga tells Hiromatsu, like, I don't get it. All the pointless death like that makes no sense to me. It's stupid. And Hiromatsu tells him, like, that it's part of a bigger whole, right? Like, there's a lot of emphasis in those early episodes on, like, basically suffering and sacrifice as a part of something bigger, like their code of honor and the way that their society and the culture functions. And I think Hiromatsu is clearly calling back to that almost in a way to say, like, all right, I get what we're doing here. I understand. Granted, me, Ross, I don't understand. Like, I don't fully get it. But Hiromatsu seemed like he fully got it. And he says, so you do believe in pointless death. Your vassal dies in vain. And then Torunaga says, then die.
And so for that line that Hiromatsu said, it underlined do. Like the subtitle.
So you do believe in pointless death.
Have they done that in, like, for other
ones? I think
like
one or two other times. Okay. Like for emphasis, but it did stand out.
Yeah.
For sure. So Hiromatsu says, Lord Torunaga, then this is farewell. And Hiromatsu calls for Buntaro to be his second, which is fucked because that's his son. The whole scene is fucked. This is one of the most powerful
Buntaro's
scenes.
Buntaro's already gone through it with his wife not wanting to commit seppuku with him.
He's having a day, dude. Yeah. He's having a day. Wife won't kill herself with him, and then he's got to kill his own dad. So Buntaro says, he like goes and kneels down next to Hiromatsu, and he's like, I will join you in death. Hiromatsu says, no. So he won't die with him either. He says no.
Buntaro just doesn't want to be around anymore.
He doesn't. He doesn't, dude. He's got too much shit on. But he wants to die with his dad. Hiromatsu says, you will learn what it means to be told no, basically, to be denied. and tells him he must live, and very, very interestingly says, and you must never give up on our Lord, even when it appears he has given up on himself. So again, to me, that indicates that Hiromatsu knows what's happening.
Yeah, he's implying that he figured out what Toranaga's plan was.
Yeah.
And like, just like stay strong and you know, stay loyal to him.
Right. Now, so Bontaro cries again, and then seppuku happens, and just like it was the first time we watched it, it's absolutely disgusting. Yeah. And
they didn't even show the head the last time.
No,
they,
no. This time we got the rolling head,
yeah,
though. Bontaro, one clean strike, head, yeah, gone, rolls over to Toranaga, who appears to be absolutely furious with the way this has unfolded. So again, either this guy wasn't quite sure, either Toranaga didn't even realize what was happening, and Hiromatsu did, or Toranaga is just the best actor ever. And I'm, yeah, not talking about the guy who plays Toranaga. I'm talking about Toranaga, the character, was, yeah, so... If he went into this knowing, like, Hiromatsu's going to have to sacrifice himself, and that's going to cause all these other fuckers to think we're totally screwed, and cause Yabushige to say yes to Blackthorn and take him up on that whole ship thing, and cause who knows what else to happen with the Edo generals and shit we haven't even seen yet, but, like, at the... Nothing else happens in this meeting. It's almost like, well, if somebody commits seppuku, the meeting's over.
Meeting adjourned.
Nobody can protest any further, you know?
Yeah.
So there, it was really hard to tell, though. Like, if... Like, let's just get through the rest of the episode, I guess. There's not much here. So next, Mariko visits Toranaga, who asks if she disagrees with what happened today. And she is, like, stoic as ever. She says, it was a hard enough day. I wouldn't add my disagreement to the things that make it hard. Then they recite some poetry together. Again, there's like a lot of poetry,
yeah, in this
going
episode,
on.
Yeah.
Poetry that I couldn't wrap my head around.
Yeah.
Then he says, kind of out of nowhere, he's like, all right, good poetry session. So tell me, has the Anjin gone to Yabushige yet? And it's kind of like a big reveal moment where you're like, whoa.
Yeah, like he knew.
He knew that he would do that ahead of,
yeah,
time.
And not only he knew he was going to do that, but like, they knew who's also going to take him up on his offer later.
Right. So Mariko says yes, but that Yabushige refused. Toranaga says that today's events will change Yabushige's mind, which would lead you to believe that Toranaga did in fact know things would go the way they went at that meeting, and that this is all part of his plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is fucking confusing. Like, as somebody who's watched the episode twice, I'm telling you, still going back through those scenes, I was like, but does he know what he's doing here, or is this just like...
Yeah,
he actually falling apart, and then shit kind of falls together as a result?
Yeah, or he's just like so good at reading people and knowing like what they're gonna do, and it's just like, I don't know.
He's so many chess moves ahead then, because,
yeah,
I'm watching this going, oh my god, we're fucked. Our team's fucked. It's over. We're screwed. We're all gonna die.
We're taking the L.
And
yeah,
this dude's like very confident in the way things are unfolding. He's like, again, so he says, today's events will change Yabushige's mind, implying that Yabushige will now accept Blackthorn's invitation to let him sail under his banner. He says, quote, Hiromatsu made sure of it. And he says, the Anjin and Yabushige are very predictable. He compares them to a certain kind of bird.
Yeah, the hawk, I think.
Some kind of, some specific kind of hawk, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the one that like he rolls around with.
Right.
Yeah.
But that you can basically predict their moves. Kind of a callback to that conversation he has with his son when he, mm-hmm, demotes him as coach of canon practice, tells him you're not in charge of coaching anymore. And as he's saying Anjin and Yabushige are very predictable, Mariko's like realizing what's happening, falls to her knees. Toranaga joins her, walks over to her, drops down to his knees, and says Hiromatsu, his old friend, knew his duty well. Like, again, implying that was all fucking scripted, essentially, which is wild. You sacrifice. Like, last week I was saying there's pretty much one guy in his whole squad he knows he can count on. Well, now that guy's dead because he sacrificed him just to make some crazy fucking ruse, like some ruse. And I don't understand the benefit.
Yeah, no, he just keeps losing people. And I guess it is for, like, the illusion that, like, he's been defeated. Like, oh, you lost your right-hand
man.
But
what advantage does that give him?
Again, like, I don't think it does.
Clearly, he knows how.
Yeah, he knows, yeah.
But as a viewer with no further information, you're like, I don't understand how this possibly makes him better off. Like, all we've been given is that he clearly wants Osaka to see him as defeated. So he must have some way that if they think he's done, he's able to take advantage of that and turn things in his favor. I just don't have the slightest fucking clue how yet.
Yeah.
Because the rest of this makes absolutely no sense to me. So he says, Osaka has to believe my defeat is real. Now, are you ready to do your part? And Mariko, like, they like zoom in on her face. Super intense. Great scene.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I'm ready.
And her part in this is, I'm assuming, going and talking to Lady Ochiba. And...
But to what end? We don't know.
Right.
So in Osaka, we get this very quick scene, which is right after all that intensity. So you're kind of still up in your head like, God damn, that was crazy. What is Torunaga doing? Does he like, what the fuck? And they just show you really quickly Lady Ochiba walking into a room where Ishido is, and then she bows to him, seemingly accepting his proposal. Like, mm-hmm. he has a look on his face.
Yeah,
like,
he's like smiling.
Gotcha, bitch.
Yeah.
And she looks bummed, which is weird because the Dion, whatever lady, the lady who just had a stroke and died, told her very specifically, no Ishido, that guy stinks. You should be out on Ishido. But then she immediately goes and accepts the proposal, so it just... was hard to read.
I think is one thing is, again, like the fear thing, like thinking that he might kill her and his son.
Yeah,
she says no, and I think it is also a part of her plan. Like, I think, like, you know, staying close to him and knowing what his plans are, then, like, she can use that to take advantage of him later. Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's a great point. And, I mean, you've kind of, the whole time, ever since we got really introduced to Ochiba, it does seem like her and Torunaga are kind of running parallel.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of the hate that she expresses for Torunaga, it has seemed like they're going to end up aligned somehow, yeah. One way or the other.
And like Alvido, like in that scene with Alvido, he mentions, like, I think Torunaga does have like a good relationship with the heir, like you saw in episode one.
Definitely seemed like it, yeah.
So like, and like that was kind of like Ishido's whole reasoning to like start this war with him, because he's like, oh, Torunaga wants to kill the heir.
Power. Yeah, he wants to take.
And he wants
to
be shogun.
Yeah.
And like, I think that was like just all based off a lie, just so Ishido could like take power.
Yeah. Yeah. So, back in Edo, Yabushige does indeed accept the Anjin's proposal to let him sail for him, as Torunaga predicted. Omi, I would note, seems to abandon his uncle in disagreement with his plan. Again, calling back to the conversation he had with Kiku, I think he has chosen loyalty to Torunaga.
Because
mm-hmm. he's like, Uncle, what the fuck are you, what are you doing? He's like, don't ask me questions about my shit. And Omi's like, farewell. Like,
right,
best
luck.
Of luck,
yeah.
Bro, but I am out. And Yabushige throws him one of those, like a grunt, yeah. And like a frustrated grunt, and then just turns and walks away, right? So Yabushige tells Blackthorn that they are allies now. They have their bro moment up there.
Yeah.
They're like, all right, boys, we're boys now. And before they can enjoy that for long, Tota Mariko sails up, and they're like, what the fuck is she doing here? And she's like, oh, so Torunaga has asked that I accompany you to Osaka, which is obviously a huge light bulb moment for both of these dudes, as they're like, this motherfucker knew. He knew we were going to do this. He somehow got us to do this. And again, in their minds, they must be asking the same question we are, which is like, but why? What is the point? What are we doing? What the fuck is happening?
Well, they do have all the guns and stuff, and yeah. You know, if he makes it seem like they're surrendering all that stuff to them, like it's there already for them to use later.
Well, I mean, my guess is that Torunaga's 49 days are going to end.
Yeah. Also, Psyche, does he get another 49 days, or like, does
that's
that,
a really good question for Hiromatsu.
Yeah.
I had the same thought. I was like, is this like a, what is it, be like 98 days he gets?
Just the plan
total,
scheme.
Just to plot? Yeah.
Yeah.
So my guess is that no, he won't get an additional 49. There's probably some rule about like if you have, like, whatever. But that they're, okay, so Yabushige and Mariko and Blackthorn are going to be on a ship, which first of all, Blackthorn and Mariko pillowing alert for me.
Yeah.
Feel like there's more coming. Because, you know, she just dissed her husband in every possible way, the lowest level. I would rather live 1,000 more. This is the woman who's been begging for death all season, says she would rather live 1,000 more years than die with this fucking guy. I have to imagine there's going to be more of their love story on the boat. But my guess is that, so you got Yabushige, you got Blackthorn. They're on the ship. They're headed to Osaka. They got all the guns on there, mm-hmm. right?
And he's going to be, like, Torunaga's going to be, like, in, like, that main council room with like all of his generals.
Maybe. I don't even think it's going to get that far. I think Torinaga riding up to Osaka with Saiki and his army, that's somehow going to shift. I think Saiki being a turncoat and being on Ishidu's side might be fake. I think he might actually still be with Torinaga, and that whole thing is a setup. So it's going to be like, have you ever seen Braveheart?
No, I have not.
Well, there's a scene where the Scottish are going up against the Irish, and William Wallace is the head Scottish guy, right? And he's got like this psycho Irish dude with him, and they're full sprinting into battle with the Irish. And right before they run into each other, they both stop and they all like dap each other up and shake hands. They're like, "What's up?" And then they join forces and attack the British. I'm guessing there's going to be a similar type situation with Saiki and his men. So the point being, Yabushige and Blackthorn now have a maritime presence in the ship. Mm-hmm. They can attack from sea with the cannons, as Torinaga and Saiki and their forces are attacking from land.
So you think Torinaga, like, surrendering to Saiki,
I think
was
it's all bullshit.
All part of his plan.
I think that's the only part that I could see being more easily readable. Everything else, like, my biggest question is, why did Hiramatsu have to die? If you really wanted them to think, like, you're crushed, defeated, did he have to die? Couldn't you have faked his death somehow or something? You know, like, fuck,
yeah,
man.
I think you gotta make it look as real as possible.
He definitely sold it. His head's gone.
Also, like, I don't know, I guess, like, on war, like, no fighting. Like, he's not gonna really do much out there. So, like,
he's old.
Yeah.
He's an old dude. Kind of served his purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just felt like such. Look, it plays into the whole thing about their culture that we've kind of questioned on and off all season long, which is like, you know, that Blackthorn kept bumping up against with Mariko. She's like, you basically have to accept your place. You don't decide anything as an individual. You're just along for the ride. And he's like, that's bullshit. Life is valuable, and it should be treated as such. And, like, they don't necessarily see it the same way. So for, like, Hiramatsu to die for this purpose, huge honor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Great life lived. Not seen as a negative thing to Hiramatsu. But, of course, to us as viewers, and especially with a Western state of mind, like, I'm watching, like, fuck that, dude. What? Get one of these other fuckers to die. Why me? I'm your best friend. You know what I mean? It's like, that's his best friend. Just, that was crazy to watch unfold. But, yeah, so Mariko and Blackthorn and Yabushige will be rolling in the ship.
And is Omi still with them, too?
No, Omi bounced.
Oh, okay.
So he's not going. And not with them on the ship anyway. So Torinaga rises the next day. And by the way, I would note, his castle in Edo, his palace, is like very much under construction.
Yeah.
They keep showing. It's got like...
They're expanding. They're building a lot.
Renovations.
Yeah,
major renovations, right. It would seem. So he wakes up. He gives like one more cough.
Yeah, just to fake the viewers out.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like... And then... All of a sudden, he just kind of bounces up. He's, like, seemingly much stronger now, dresses in his full, like, general garb, walks out to the funeral pier where the ashes of Nagakoto Kato are still fresh, thanks him for buying him some time. He's not like, I miss you, son, or...
Thanks for those 49 days.
Right.
Really, could He's really
just
use
like,
a...
thanks, dude. Yeah. This was great. This was really good to get some extra time. He says, quote, I will not waste it. Hiramatsu and you both... I will not waste it. And so we're back to the place we've been for the last 30 minutes, which is like, what is his plan? What is he doing? Did he know this whole time, or did Hiramatsu spur him back into a place where he's ready to fight again? Was he really sick and on the ropes, or was that all an act? How much of this was real? How much of it was part of his plan? And it's pretty impossible to know, but I will say this. You have to assume he couldn't find any other angles because he just sacrificed his son, albeit probably unintentionally, and his best friend just to get a little more time to finally hatch this scheme. And goddamn, it would be tight if there had been another way to go about it for him.
Yeah.
I assume he would have preferred a way where he didn't lose his best friend and his kid.
Right.
But that's just me assuming, which, as we know, can make an ass out of you and me.
Right. Exactly. But... Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I'm just trying to figure out, like, you know, what actually, like, was part of his plan, especially with, like, the Nagakoto stuff. Like, did he, like, know, like, he was going to do some dumb shit like that and try and attack Saiki.
He kind of couldn't have known, though, yeah. like in but, that
or
like that
I mean,
one.
I guess because he did, again, attack the
cannon
general
practice.
Cannon practice.
Yeah. yeah.
So, like, I think, like, he already has it in his mind that, you know,
the kid does reckless shit.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, yeah, all the other guys said that, too.
But he couldn't have possibly predicted that Nagakato would go attempt to kill Saiki and slip and die, right?
Right.
I guess he could have predicted that he might attempt to go kill Saiki and die.
Yeah, just not how...
But even then, like, yeah, that doesn't... That's why it's kind of hard not to be in what I assume is a group of people who believe that Torinaga has kind of been flying by the seat of his pants, and that Nagakato's death, which was not part of his plan, did present him with an opportunity, and that even in the case of Hiramatsu, perhaps, Torinaga did not see it coming, did not know it was going to happen, but because it did happen, he's going to use it.
Yeah.
Which that one's tough to accept, because it's like, God, again, we're back to, like, your best friend, man. Like, come on. But I don't know. I'm assuming, first of all, this is why, as I've said in the past, I think this show will be really fun to rewatch once we've seen the conclusion,
mm-hmm.
because then we'll have a better idea of what's happening during some of these really tricky, confusing scenes throughout the course of the season. But fuck, they have such, like, we got two more, right? That's it, 9 and 10. Next week is the penultimate episode, and then the finale the week after that. They have put this thing in a position to give us a couple of really explosive hours of TV.
For
sure,
with
a lot happening, and I'm very excited to see how it unfolds. But this was another great one, man. This was, like, tough to watch at different... I mean, the scene with Hiramatsu and his seppuku was... That was intense,
man. That
was
rough, yeah.
That was tough, but all in all, it was very, very well done. Today's episode is also brought to you by our listeners supporting our show by subscribing on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles in exchange for so much more OCC ad-free. A reminder, Barrett and I went and watched Dune Part 2 in theaters. We recorded an hour-long discussion and review of the film, which is available to enjoy exclusively on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. And you may be thinking, I would love to enjoy that discussion and review of Dune Part 2. You can, and it won't cost you a dime. Right now on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, you can sign up for a 7-day free trial. That's 7 days of membership for free, and enjoy our entire discussion and review of Dune Part 2 in either audio form by joining the Clam Fam tier, or have video as an option for most of our episodes by joining the Mollusk Militia tier. In addition to our Dune Part 2 discussion and review, subscribing on Patreon will also give you access to the other movies we've discussed and reviewed over the years, like Oppenheimer, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Saltburn, Parasite, Interstellar, Joker, Casino Royale, Tenet, 1917, Ex Machina, The Talented Mr. Ripley, Booksmart, Knives Out, and more. You can see all the movies we've discussed and reviewed by clicking on the Movie Club collection of our Patreon. And of course, patreon.com/oystersclamscockles is also home to our entire companion podcast for every single episode of HBO's classic crime drama, The Sopranos, our weekly bonus coverage of Shogun, which we will have another one coming out on Thursday this week with Cade and I taking hotline calls from the Mollusk Militia and further dissecting and discussing episode 8 of Shogun, as well as bonus coverage of House of the Dragon, Succession, The White Lotus, The Last of Us, Foundation, Silo, and True Detective Night Country. When you join, you gain access to our entire backlog of ad-free premium content. We are talking years of OCC that you have never seen or heard if you've never been on our Patreon. And again, right now, it's completely free for you to join and enjoy for 7 days. And then it's just $5 per month for the Clam Fam tier, or $10 per month to join the Mollusk Militia, where you also gain access to full video of most episodes if you're a YouTube watcher, plus the Mollusk Militia exclusive hotline for a chance to be featured on the Patreon episodes, and the Mollusk Militia exclusive Discord as well. Hundreds of hours of OCC available for free during the 7-day free trial, anyway. All of this while supporting your favorite podcast. What a deal. Act now, as this 7-day free trial won't be available forever. Again, we appreciate all of you for being here, for watching and enjoying Shogun with us, and remind you that we started off as a Game of Thrones podcast way back in the day, so obviously we hope to be your go-to companion podcast when House of the Dragon returns for season 2 this June, just a couple of months away. Our show is available not only on all the major podcast platforms, but also YouTube as well. YouTube.com/@oystersclamscockles. Subscribe, rate, review, comment, share our show with those you know. Thank you very much. If you're watching on YouTube right now, hit that subscribe button, hit the like button, leave us a comment with your thoughts on the episode, and that will do it for today's show. Remember, again, we are available on all the major podcast platforms, but also in full video on YouTube.com/@oystersclamscockles for your viewing pleasure. Shout out to everybody watching on YouTube. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. If you're listening on Spotify, please give us 5 stars. For more from me, Ross Bolin, listen to the Ross Bolin Podcast wherever podcasts are played, or watch on YouTube.com/@TheRossBolinPodcast, where Cade is actually my co-host, and you'll get more of Cade as well. Cade, where can the people follow you?
You can follow me on all the social media platforms at Cade Orris. That's KadeOrris.
If you are an F1 fan, check out Formula Bone, Bolin Media's premier F1 programming, hosted by Jared J-Bone Borislow at YouTube.com/@FormulaBone, at Formula Bone on all the social media sites, and Formula Bone on the podcast platforms as well for F1 coverage all season long. Previews and recaps of every race. Jared J-Bone does a phenomenal job with Formula Bone and all the F1 coverage. If you're a Houston sports fan, check out Banging the Can, hosted by me, wherever you get your podcast, wherever you get your OCC. What else? I think that's it. Go to bolinmedia.com/shop to grab yourself some merch. Thank you again for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We look forward to hearing everyone's reactions on Patreon this week and reading them on social media as well. Until next time, hey, hey, oh!